Shalom and welcome to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. This is a recording of a Shabbat teaching by Rabbi Cantor Hilary Chorney.
If you have some sort of a chumash in front of you, some sort of a copy of the Hebrew Bible, in the Eitz Chaim specifically, we're on page 568. We're in the 39th chapter of Exodus. And I want to preview something from next weekend. Next Shabbat morning, during Hama'alot, the theme of the morning is what it means for an ending to actually be a beginning, a commencement. We come to the end of something, and the end of anything is actually the beginning of something new. A new stage, a new phase, moving on, but moving on means closing the last chapter. In anticipation of that, I was looking at the notion of what it meant to actually be finished, though. Before we move on to the idea that finishing is only the beginning, I wanted to think about that idea of the satisfaction, the gratification that comes from having completed a task. And in this coming week's Torah portion, we have a moment in which we see leadership and the people experiencing a moment of true acknowledgement of an end. And it's a moment of acknowledgement that it's the end. This is the end of something. And it's not only the end, it's a praiseworthy end. So we're on 568, chapter 39, and yet again, for about the third time in Parshat Pekudei, we see an entire list of everything that's been done to complete the work of the Tent of Meeting. And we get to verse 43. I'll back up to verse 42 for a moment. Kechol asher tziva Adonai et Moshe. And as for all that was commanded by God to Moses, Kain Asu B'nei Yisrael, thus did the children of Israel, et kol ha'avodah. The grammar is worth picking apart, but we don't have time for that today. That is, they did all of the work. Exactly as God commanded Moses to have them do, they did it. Followed by, in verse 43, Vayar Moshe, and Moses saw et kol hamlacha, all of the malacha, which in contemporary Jewish practice, we usually use to refer to what? What's malacha? Close, work, handiwork. And why do we know from malacha? We aren't building a tabernacle. What? Malacha is a category of prohibited practice. When are we prohibited from doing malacha? Shabbat, Chag, and we're studying Moed Katan right now among the rabbinic team, the clergy team, in order to be done with it for the Siyum. And even the Chol HaMoed, the intermediate days of the festival, was a time where we examined what malacha could and couldn't be done. What is malacha not? Malacha is not work that makes you sweat, stuff that you do that you would personally call work. Malacha, rather, are categories of action that we eventually, through the rabbinic tradition, had as prohibitions because this was, in fact, a work that would have been done to complete the tabernacle. So if it was in the list of the workload that one would have done to complete the tabernacle, then it becomes a part of this category of forbidden action. Oh, that's spun out a little bit. Yeah.
Also, the list that's right here from verse 33 to 41 is 39.
Correct. This is the section on which we base all of the 39 of
the list of things in the Mishkan.
Oh, it happens to be 39.
Well, if you count verse 41 as one thing.
Oh, I like that.
Yes.
Yeah. It is, but it is, in fact, a great description of many of the av malachot, many of the the general categories, we'll call them, the general categories of prohibited action. That's cool. I like the 39 things. So there are 39 of these prohibited categories. All you need to know is that this is the work that the Israelites did right now in the context of this, in the plain meaning of this text. The Israelites have done the work as it was commanded to them. Vayar Moshe et kol hamlacha, and Moses saw all of this malacha, all of these tasks that were done. Vehine asu ota ka'asher tziva Adonai, a repetition of what the narrator said the verse before. The narrator said, hey, the Israelites did all of the stuff that God told Moses they should do. And then in verse 43, and Moses saw that the Israelites did all the work exactly as God had commanded it to them. Cain Asu, they had done it. And these last three words are what we're going to focus on for our learning. Vayivarech Otam Moshe. What did God do? Moses. What did Moses do? What did God do? We don't know what God did in this verse. What did Moses do? He blessed them. Great. We're going to, usually on my source sheets, I try my best to go in the chronological order of the commentaries, but I'm not interested in that today, so I'm not doing that. I'm looking at different questions, and the first question that I have comes from the Or HaChaim, and I want to look at two. We're going to skip over one. We only have so much time, so we're going to look at number two. This is on this part of the verse, the previous commentary is on the previous part of this verse 43. Vayivarech Otam Moshe. The reason that the Torah wrote the name Moshe, Moses, instead of simply he blessed them, right? The verse invokes the name of Moses, is to teach us not to take this blessing lightly. To drill down on this commentary, which I believe is 18th century, to drill down on this commentary a little bit, the notion here isn't just that Moses is mentioned by name, but which part of the verse Moses is mentioned in. Moses is mentioned right here at the end of the verse. Vayivarech Otam Moshe. Ends with the emphasis. And he blessed them. That is Moses. And that's how we end this portion of the story that eventually became a chapter division. So it's something very special, says the Or HaChaim, to be blessed by a man of God such as Moshe. If the people had been blessed by someone of lesser stature, the Torah would not have recorded this as something we have to know so many thousands of years later. And also normally, the Torah could have written what? Moshe Beirach Otam, or who? Beirach Otam, Moshe blessed them, as in the we don't have a past or a future tense, but rather in the point being that we could have moved Moshe's name to the beginning of this phrase, not just the beginning of this sentence, but by placing the name Moshe at the end of the line, the Torah taught us the significance of being blessed by someone of Moshe's standing. So if you pick this apart in plainer English, what this means is, it's one thing to say their teacher praised them, and it's another thing to say they were praised greatly by whom? The teacher herself, right? To end with the one who is doing the subject is to emphasize what? What's so special about that? I agree with the take on the commentary, but what is so special about being blessed by a particular person? How does it feel different to be blessed by a Moshe rather than just anyone? Okay, so as Marshall says, Moshe is a man of God, and so he's conveying the messages of the people, so he has a certain standing. His praise has a certain standing. Yeah, Bob. Right. He saw what they did, and we're going to get to the meaning of Vaya'ar for now, but I will still read back into what you're saying, that Moshe was the one who saw what they did. It's one thing to have someone say, hey, I heard that program last week went really nicely, versus someone who said, you know, I'm so glad I came to that program. It was wonderful. Right. So you're right. Actually, if you don't mind my reading your commentary about the Vayar into the verse, it's true that there's something to the fact that it was the person observing the labor who comes and says, wow, bless you. This was amazing. This is amazing. Go ahead. Any other takes on why it's so special to have somebody? Moshe liberated them. So it's the figure whom he is to the Israelites. He's the one who took them out of Egypt. Even though it's the hand of God, Moshe is the one who's leading the charge. And now they've done a task as a team, ostensibly as a people. And he's saying, blessing Otam. So I'm going to read your commentary back into the verse. He blessed them. That is Moshe. And what was he blessing? He blessed them. Right? We're not going to actually go anywhere like in that direction in this commentary today. That there's something to be said about the fact that Moshe blessed them as a people in this moment. He liberated them, but he liberated a kind of a mishmash of fleeing, people who are fleeing from a life of slavery. It was just a whole mixed bag of people and a mixed multitude along with them. And now he's blessing them and blessing them as a people. Good. Okay. So I think this answers the question, why is this blessing so special I'm doing this Jeopardy style, so backwards, that's the question I'm inventing. And the answer is, it's a special blessing and it's a special moment of conclusion because Moses is the one to come and offer the blessing in that moment. I'll add my own commentary to it, which is to say twice in 42 and 43, we are told specifically that the people did the work as God commanded Moses to have them do. And there's something about your work being examined and said, and someone saying, thank you not only for doing it, but really doing it as I asked. And by the way, as I asked, being the one organizing a task or God organizing the task, is very different than thanks for doing it well. Thanks for doing it to the best of your abilities. This is something else. Thanks for doing it just like God asked. Moshe's the inspector in that regard, and they're getting a passing grade on their inspection. Yeah.
It also sets the continuity from God to Moses.
Great. And it also preserves the continuity of this line. God commands Moses. Moses oversees the work. Vayar, he sees it. And then he blesses them on having completed it. Great. So it preserves that chain of supervision from God. We're going to skip over the latter part of the Ora Chaim. You can read this commentary on your own time, but we're going to move on to Rashi. And by moving on, I mean moving backwards in time. Sorry, but I wanted to ask a different question next. When we get into this commentary, again, 11th through 13th centuries, because obviously Rashi was approximately 220 years old by the time Rashi was. We can talk about that another time. We'll say the school of Rashi. The school of Rashi says something about, well, what exactly, I'm going to, again, Jeopardy S. What exactly was the blessing that Moshe gave them? Now, the text, the Ora Chaim points out, how cool is it that the text wants us to know exactly who offered a blessing in that moment, wants us to know that Moshe came and blessed the people. But the blessing text isn't there. So Rashi asks the question, bless them how? Bless them with what? Bless them with words, with anointment, with hand placing. And if so, with words, then with what words? So Rashi says, he said to them, who's the he? Moshe says to the people. Okay, so he's quoting Moshe to us, even though it's not in the text. And he's taking this, as he often does, Rashi, from an old collection of Midrashim called the Sifra, so that anticipates Rashi by like 1,000 years. And he's pulling in this commentary, this notion that what he blessed them with is, I love that this is in the English, may it be the will of God that his Shekhinah rest upon the work of your hands, and let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish thou the work of our hands upon us. That's from, it tells you right here, Psalm 90. But when do we do Psalm 90? It's a Shabbat psalm, one of the 11, and there are two places. Anyone know the closing lines of this? It's catchy. Right, Umaseyadenu Konanehu, right? And so it comes from, nicely done, nicely retranslated back into our text. So when do we say this? In Pesukei de Zimras, on Shabbat and on Chag. So on our the days when we have an additional set of psalms that we read to get ourselves ready for the day, we read on page 100, and sorry, I should have taken the page first. It's on page 129. Okay. And so read it out loud all together. Let's try it all together. Vihi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu. May the beauty of God rest upon us. Umaaseh Yadenu Konena Aleinu. Umaaseh Yadenu Konenehu. Great. So that's the translation of, that's what we have here in the Rashi, the translation of that verse. So oftentimes, our commentators want to give context to the Psalms. What I mean by that is they'll see a verse in the Psalms like Tsar li Elohim or Umaaseh Yadenu Konanehu, like the work of our hands is upon us. And they ask the question going backwards, what work? What was the psalmist referring to? Ah, I know what they were referring to. They must have been referring to this verse, or rather, this is the blessing that's inscribed here. Also, the little piskaot, these little phrases that come before each of the psalms that we read, each of the tehillim in our siddur, are not a part of the psalms themselves. They're a sign in very, very early rabbinic times. So if you look on page 129, you see that the introduction to the psalm is Tefillah LeMoshe Ish HaElohim. This is a prayer ascribed to Moses, who was a man of God. Going back to what you said, Marshall, right? Baruch Shekivanta, blessed be that you thought of the same thing that Rashi said thousands of years ago. Oh, you didn't remember the name? Okay. No. That's okay. You can take the credit. Yeah, exactly. I'll also add one last little bit. On page 279, if you want to follow along in the Siddur, this verse also shows up at the end of Shabbat, and we're about to read it. That's why I want to point it out. Not that it has so much additional significance, but we are about to read it again. There's a little selection from Psalm 90. This selection, exactly. And when is this? Where are we in the service on 279? We're at the very, very end. We're every service has an introductory portion to the service, a main portion of the service that may contain the Shema and an Amidah, always an Amidah, but also the Shema is in that middle portion. And then there's always an outro as well. The most minimal version of this is Mincha has Ashrei and it ends with Aleinu. It's the smallest one. And the rabbis tell us in the Gemara, this is because, in the Mishnah, carried into the Gemara, that this is because people have to work and they've got stuff going on in the middle of the day. In Ma'ariv, we have an outro. And at the end of Shabbat, you can tell, we won't get too deeply into this, otherwise I'd be on another track, you can tell they're dragging their feet on ending Shabbat. Because the end of Ma'ariv is usually not this. In fact, it was actually forbidden at a certain point to have the Me'ein Sheva, to have that little additional mini repetition of the Amidah on Friday evenings, lest people be in danger as they walked home so late at night. Because evening is considered a dangerous time. It certainly was in ancient history. Despite that, we add words to our service here. We extend beyond what we need to do. It should, by all accounts, on page 279, our prayer should be Kaddish Shalem, Aleinu, mourners Kaddish, get home. It's dark, it's late, it's dangerous. But we don't, we extend, and we add this verse among a few other things. What is this verse? It's a specific selection from Psalm 90. And that the beauty of God is resting upon us. And that we pray that God establishes the work of our hands upon us. This is not, this would be a nice ending to the teaching. This is not the end of the teaching, but how nice to read back into this, that a wonderment about what work of our hands is being praised here. In other words, if there is an ancient understanding going back to the Sifra, that what these words are a blessing from Moses upon the ending of the building of the tabernacle, why are we saying this at the end of Shabbat, a time when we are prohibited from doing that kind of work? What is the malacha that's getting praised at this time? Perhaps it's even the menucha. It's actually the rest of Shabbat, not the rest of Shabbat, the rest that takes place on Shabbat that's being praised. That's not the end, but that would make a nice shiny ending. Maybe they'll cut the podcast off there, and that'll be the end of it. If and nothing else I say is interesting, right? Me too. Yeah. Thanks, Bert. You can, you know, make this the end, and then I'll continue with maybe less poignant stuff. But I was feeling pretty good about that point because I'm fascinated by this extension. I'm fascinated by the idea that we extend evening services given the sense that Maariv should not be extended. I want us to look at one more aspect of this blessing. And for this, we turn a little bit to Chassidut. We're going to look at a commentary called the Shnei Luchot HaBrit. This is a section that happens to comment on Parshat Truma, which also deals in the making of the Mishkan. And I'm going to read it out loud, and I want you to ask the question. Well, I want you to see if you can jeopardy the question that I would ask about this. What's the question that the text is asking? What's the question this commentary is asking about this moment of Moses blessing the people upon finishing the Mishkan? Here we go. All of our sages, Kol HaChachamim, agree that the tabernacle was a microcosm of the macrocosm, that it reflected to the extent possible structures and concepts and their development prevalent in the high heavens, the celestial regions, though those structures and concepts are, of course, abstract. So in Midrash Rabbah Truma, again, a very old rabbinic commentary on Parshat Truma, which also deals in the making of the tabernacle, we hear a commentary on the section of Chronicles, yours, O Lord, our greatness, might, splendor, triumph, and majesty, yes, all that is in heaven and earth. This is what Rabbi Berechia says, and he sees this as proof that God transferred God's residence to the tabernacle. There's also a Midrash Tanchuma on Parshat Pekudei, that's us, which quotes from Psalms 26:8, O God on high, I love your temple abode, the dwelling place of your glory, as proof that the residence of God on earth corresponds to the one God has in the high heavens. In other words, God has a seat on a throne up in heaven, and also God has a seat in the Mishkan. God has a place to be dwelling in the Mishkan. Its construction was also a repetition of the process of creation. So what's a repetition, or I'm going to translate this as a parallel to the act of creation? We're going to find out. Okay. This is derived from the text of Genesis 1:1. I think you know it. Bereishit bara Elohim. It's the beginning of the Torah. At the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And in Psalms 104:2, we read, you spread the heavens like a tent cloth. The tabernacle was also covered by tent cloth. As per Exodus 21:6, you shall make the tabernacle from 10 strips of tent cloth. So what's their trajectory? Bereishit 1 says God spreads it out like a tent. To Psalms, this verse that says that you spread the heavens like a tent cloth. And then the reasoning is, and when did we spread a tent cloth? When we made the Mishkan. Oh, that's what it referred to. When describing what happened on the second day of creation, The Torah speaks about a firmament, which is to separate the upper waters from the lower waters, giving instructions. Whereas when giving the instructions for building the tabernacle, the Torah directs that there should be a curtain that divides between the sanctuary and the Holy of Holies. So just as God separates the heavens from the earth, that creates a firmament for that. Also, we have what in the Mishkan? What's similar in the Mishkan? The sanctuary and the holies and Holy of Holies needs a parochah, needs a curtain to separate between the two of them, just like the firmament that we learned about early in the Torah. The Torah, relating the work God performed on the third day of creation, mentions that the waters are to be gathered in one area. So all the waters on earth were gathered into one place. Whereas during the construction of the tabernacle, the Torah commands the construction of a copper basin into which all the water is to be poured. Our bat mitzvah today spoke beautifully about the power of women and their supposed contribution to the Mishkan by having given of their implements that would then later be turned into a copper basin in the tabernacle. So this text, this midrash, sees a comparison between the ingathering of the waters that existed in the earliest version of the earth by God and the idea of collecting all the water in a basin in the Mishkan. On the fourth day of creation, the Torah reports the construction of the great luminaries. What are those? The sun and the moon, the big lights up in the sky that are sometimes there. Whereas the Torah commands the construction of what? What's the comparison? Menorah. Yeah, you have to have a menorah. It's part of the furnishings. So you also have to create lights there. On the fifth day of creation, God created the birds. I can't wait to see what they think are like birds, right? Whereas in the tabernacle, the Torah commands that what should be on the lid of the holy ark? There should be cherubim who are kruvim, whose body types include wings. Okay. And in addition to that, they said, also, we offer up the sacrifices of birds. So maybe that's more of a direct, you know, a dvar acher. That might be another way of looking at it. We also offered up sacrifices of birds. Okay. Like if you weren't buying the cherub bit, right? Like if that's not satisfying, if you don't buy the whole cherubs with wings parallel the birds, you might like the notion that there were sacrifices of birds offered there. On the sixth day of creation, God created humankind in God's own image to reflect the glory of that human being's creator. Whereas in the tabernacle, a human being, the high priest, was to be anointed and consecrated to parallel in this microcosm the function of man in the macrocosm, in this microcosm. So what is it that we did that's parallel to God creating humankind? We made, what did we make? God created humankind, and what did we make according to this? We made a priest. We made a Kohen Gadol. According to this read, we created a Kohen Gadol. We did that as a people. This is like God creating humankind. We were the ones who anointed. God didn't make the high priest. God said who was going to be the high priest, but we anointed the high priest. We made that happen. And then on the seventh day of creation, the universe is described as having been completed. And we find a similar expression when the Torah describes the construction of the tabernacle as having been completed. When the universe was completed, God blessed it. Whereas when the tabernacle was completed, Moses blessed it. Vayar Elohim, Bob pointed it out earlier. What's the Vayar Elohim? Vayar Moshe, he pointed out earlier. I gave it away. What is that parallel to? Vayar? Exactly. Vayar Elohim, and God saw all that God made, and it was tov. It was good. This midrash says that the blessing that Moshe was saying was, this is good. Just like God looked back at the end of creation on Shabbat and said, all that I made was great, so too does Moshe, in parallel to all of that creative activity, come to say, look what you did. It's tov, right? Or maybe even tov me'od. But those aren't the words that Moses uses. Instead, we have this idea from the Sifra that that we're praising the work of people's hands, because of course it's people making this, not God. Skip over the next bit, and I want to read two last things and we'll close. In the middle of page that's not numbered, that has the bolded text in the middle of it that says Parker Palmer, the act of life, a spirituality of work, creativity, and caring. I want to read this paragraph in the middle. But for me, and for many people that I know, these ordinary activities, work, creativity, caring, contain an extraordinary mix of blessing and curse. The blessing is obvious, especially when we lose the chance or capacity to do these ordinary things. The act of life makes it possible for us to discover ourselves and our world, to rest and extend our powers, to connect with other beings, to co-create a common reality. The joys of action are known to everyone who has done a job well, made something of beauty, given time and energy to a just cause. Take away the opportunity to work, to create, or to care, as our society does to too many people, and you have deprived someone of a chance to feel fully human. In other words, the opportunity to do work is the blessing in and of itself. There is a beautiful notion here that I'm going to have us back up and read one last text in a moment about. It's a commentary on the story of Jacob wrestling with the angels. The idea here is that work is not just its own reward, the opportunity to do work, not that God came and created, but carrying on from that story, God knew that the next level needed on this earth was that people had an opportunity to build these things themselves, to anoint the priest, to make the tabernacle theirs. And that's the thing that's being praised, the work of human beings' hands. That's the connection back to the psalm. The praise is over the fact that human beings did as God asked, and the fact that they did it with their hands, and that it was a labor of love. A commentary on the story of Jacob who wrestled with the angels. We're going to read from the top of that same page, the same page with Parker Palmer. Having found himself, Jacob is called to found a nation. Jacob's story is a reminder to us to not only recognize our successes, but also celebrate the new challenges that arise from those successes. The reward for a job well done, after all, is another job. May we merit success in the works of our lives and use those achievements to inspire us to even greater heights. So I guess that was a little bit too much of a teaser, because the truth is, even this commentary, and I think all the commentaries are kind of driving to the same point, say that the real blessing of this work is now the real work can begin. And not only that, but that the Jewish people, B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, in that moment in our parsha, have found favor in God's eyes by the works of their hands. And now, just as once Jacob was given the name Yisrael, that wasn't the end of his story, but rather the beginning of the lineage of the Israelite people, so too is the reward, the blessing here, the approval to move on to the next place. So I end here in a little bit of tension. And the tension is that when we have work that's really well done in our lives, and we especially have that work praised by the people who might be most responsible for seeing to that work being praiseworthy, that is in and of itself a blessing. But the blessing can't stagnate there. The point of blessed work is that you've proven that you've earned the next thing. I think every one of us has been in a position where we rightly feel gratification and rightly feel satisfaction about the job that we've done. And it's the ability to turn that gratification and satisfaction to a sense of readiness after we breathe, after we Shabbat, after we have our menucha, to accept that the blessing is that since we've done a job well, that the very people who asked us to do that job, I'd like to see more from us. And in that case, it is macrocosmic. It is the story of the Jewish people. And again, finding favor in God's eyes and being able to continue the work. It's not in building a tabernacle. It's in practicing human decency according to the rules of Torah, Halakha, the Jewish people.
You have been listening to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. If you enjoy these podcasts, we invite you to write a review on the Apple Podcast site or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about Temple Beth Am Los Angeles, go to tbala.org.